All right. Good morning, everybody. You guys can come on in and grab a seat. Got a lively crowd today. This is exciting. It's great to see all you guys. If you don't know me, if you're newer here, my name is David, and I'm actually part of the staff here at Severn. I am the small groups director. And as always, it's an honor to have a chance to be up here and a chance to teach today. And right now, we're actually in the middle of our series called Navigate. And what we've been doing, we've been looking at five different passages that help us navigate life. And what we've looked at so far is how to navigate relationships with people who don't share the same convictions you do. We've looked at how to navigate the world of politics, and we've looked at how to navigate work. So if you've missed those first 3 weeks, we definitely recommend going online, checking those out. A lot of just very relevant topics right where we are in life, and a lot of good information there. So definitely check those out. But today what we get to talk about is something that every single one of us in this room wants. So no matter how old you are, no matter how young you are, no matter what you believe or what you don't believe, this is something that we all want and something that we all spend our lives trying to get. So today I get to talk to you about how to navigate the search for happiness. Where does it come from, and how do we find it? And to do that, we're going to be in 1 Peter 3, verses 8 through 12. And I'm just going to read the passage first, and then we'll just kind of go through it. So this is 1 Peter 3, 8 through 12. "Now finally, all of you should be like-minded and sympathetic, should love believers and be compassionate and humble, not paying back evil for evil or insult for insult, but on the contrary, giving a blessing, since you were called for this, so that you can inherit a blessing. For the one who wants to love life and to see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. And he must turn away from evil and do what is good. He must seek peace and pursue it, because the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to their request. But the face of the Lord is against those who do what is evil." So, what we see in this passage kind of starts off with a list of commands. And then after that, we're kind of given the why behind the commands. And we're going to get to the content of the commands a little bit later. But I want to start with the why that we see at the end of verse 9 and beginning of verse 10. So the reason we're told to live this way is so that you can inherit a blessing, which that sounds really nice, but it begs the question, what kind of blessing is this? What does that actually mean? And at the beginning of verse 10, we see that. It's to love life and see good days, which that word good actually can literally be translated happy. So what we have here in 1 Peter, we have God has given us this passage to show us how to be someone who loves life and sees happy days. And that actually brings us to our first main idea today, which is that God cares about your happiness. Now, I'm aware of the different emotions that might have just swept through this room when I say that statement, because I know for some of us, our mind probably immediately jumps to difficult circumstances, either ones that we've experienced before or that we're in right now, and those circumstances might make it hard to believe a statement like that. And I know others of us, we've been in the church world long enough, and when we hear a statement like God cares about your happiness, all your mind goes to, all you can think about is the health and wealth gospel, which if you're not familiar with that, that's the idea that's out there, that God wants you to have whatever you want. And for five easy donations of $29.99, you can have it. Which, in case you're wondering, that is not what we're talking about here today. But I believe there's probably, plenty of other feelings of uncertainty or doubt, when you hear the idea that God cares about your happiness. And I believe where those come from is a misunderstanding about happiness and a misunderstanding about who God is. And I think this is such an important idea to talk about because I believe if we took an anonymous survey in this room so we could all get really honest, a whole lot of us view God as someone who has set up rules or set up boundaries in order to prevent us from being happy. And maybe not prevent us, maybe just feel like, well, he's not interested in that. He just wants me to do what he says. But I think it's so important that we realize this because we don't have to look much further than right at the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 3, to see what happens when we don't believe this. Because Adam and Eve, the story of Adam and Eve is in Genesis 3, they received guidelines from God as far as what was right, what was not. But they felt like God was holding out on them, and they thought, okay, maybe he doesn't have our best in mind. They didn't trust that. I think happiness will be found outside of what God has told us is right, as opposed to inside it. So they go their own way. They do their own thing, and the results are devastating. Sin and death enter the world, and the relationship between God and man are broken. But God is, in fact, interested in our happiness, and we can actually see it all through the Bible. For instance, Jesus' first sermon, which we call the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is constantly referring to a type of person who he calls blessed or blessed. That word literally means happy. So he's talking about happiness on his first sermon. Jesus also said in John 15, he said his desire was for his joy, that his joy would be in us, so that our joy can be complete. And that word joy can also mean gladness. So if you think of it that way, it's Jesus saying he wants his gladness to be in us so we can have complete gladness, which I feel like we don't typically think of God that way. And in Psalm 34, we can actually see the psalmist saying, he says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. How happy is the man who takes refuge in him." And then here in this passage, obviously, God gave us a passage in 1 Peter about how to be someone who loves life and sees good days or happy days. And there's plenty of other examples I could point to. For the sake of time, I won't just stand here listing examples for you guys today. But there's plenty of other examples, but I think what really is just important to drive home is that God's not out to make us miserable. He does, in fact, care about our happiness. And I think this idea can be maybe a little more easy to understand when we think about it in the context of kids. So if you're here today and you have children, I am absolutely sure that you love your children. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you want your kids to be happy. That's a pretty universal thing. So what makes us think that God would be any different? And I'm actually just going to read a short two verses out of Matthew 7, because Jesus made this exact same point in Matthew 7, verses 9 through 11. So Jesus is hitting us with some rhetorical questions here. He says, "What man among you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for fish, will give him a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him?" So he's making the point here that, hey, you like giving your kids what's good for them. You have the best for your kids in mind. So does God. Why would you think God doesn't have that same thing in mind? Now, what that doesn't say is that God will give you everything you want. And the same is true for our kids, because if I were to give my kids everything they wanted, I have a daughter who's almost three. She would eat sugar constantly, and she would get a new toy about every 3 seconds. And my son, who's 9 months old, he would combine those two things, and he would eat a new toy every 3 seconds. But it's what they want. That's what they want. But as their father, I know what's best for them, or I hope I know what's best for them. I want what's best for them, and I know what's good for them, and I want them to truly be happy. And while my kids might be excited if they gained access to infinite sugar, it's not going to make them happy. It's going to make them sick. And I think that's just such an important thing for us to realize, that being happy doesn't mean just getting everything that we want. And we can so easily fall for that idea. And when we think about it, it's kind of crazy we keep falling for it. Because I'm sure you can point back to a time in your life where you said, if I just had that, I'd be happy. And then you got that thing. And maybe you were excited, for a month, maybe a year, maybe a little bit longer. But then eventually you realize, I'm not actually happy. If I just had that, I'd be happy. And instead of changing the way we're looking for happiness, we just fill in the blank with something else. And the issue is that we can literally go our entire lives playing that game, because getting everything we want will not make us happy. In our day and age today, we actually have people we can look at, living examples that we can look at of people who have everything we say we want. We call them celebrities. They have millions, if not billions of dollars. They have all the sex, cars, houses, success, fame. They have it all, but they so often do not have happiness. But, if we're being honest, there's a lot of Christians who don't seem that happy either, which is why I think this was included in 1 Peter, because this letter that we call 1 Peter was written to people who were already followers of Jesus, which just goes to show that if you've already put your faith in Jesus, if you're already following Jesus, you don't just automatically have it all figured out about how to be happy or how to love life and see good days, which is why we have this passage in here. And this just shows that, we haven't arrived yet. So that kind of begs the question, how do we find this happiness? How do we get a happiness that goes beyond our circumstances or beyond our stuff? How do we actually become someone who loves life and who sees good or happy days? And that actually takes us right back to the beginning of the passage we're in today to look at those commands that were given on the front end. And I'm just going to reread the first two verses, which are verses 8 and 9, where we see that list. It says, "Now finally, all of you should be like-minded and sympathetic, should love believers and be compassionate and humble, not paying back evil for evil or insult for insult, but on the contrary, giving a blessing, since you were called for this so that you can inherit a blessing." And what all these commands, if we look at them kind of as a whole, what they all have in common, the main thread through all of them, is that they're focused on other people. Or in other words, God is calling us to be selfless. Which actually brings us to our second main idea today, which is that selflessness is key to happiness. And this is a pretty counterintuitive idea, because I think naturally the way that we think is that if I'm going to be happy, I need to look out for me. You know, I need to get mine. But the ironic thing is there's really no quicker way to ensure that you'll never be happy than to only focus on yourself, which is why, you know, you can look around at you, the most greedy people you know aren't the happiest people you know. But what I want to do, I just want to look real briefly at each of these words here, each of these commands, so we can kind of get a better picture of, you know, what kind of selflessness is this? What does that actually look like? And the first word that we see there is like-mindedness. And what this word implies, it implies conforming one's goals, needs, and expectations to that of a larger community. So I'll say that again, it's kind of a wordy definition, but it's conforming your goals, your needs, and your expectations to that of a larger community. So really, it's just thinking of others' interests before yourself. It's really conforming yourself to that, which can be a really hard idea for us, especially as Americans, because we have such an individualistic culture that we live in. So this idea is hard for everyone. For us, it's just a little bit harder because we don't really live in a communal culture. We live in an individualistic one. Secondly, we have the idea of being sympathetic, which other translations will say understanding. Really, this is just deferentially seeing things from another person's point of view. So it's taking the time to actually listen to someone else's perspective, not just tell them how things are. It's caring enough to see what the world looks like through someone else's eyes. And then next, the idea that we see is the idea of loving believers, which again, this letter was written to Christians. So this is saying, hey, love your fellow Christians. And this isn't just like a warm, fuzzy love. This is love that's an action. You know, you want to do right by your fellow believers, which, you know, you might ask, well, why do we need that? We all love each other because we're Christians. But if you look at Twitter for 2 seconds nowadays, it gets pretty discouraging because Christians are experts at like getting each other's throats and being really venomous about issues that are so often just not central issues. So this is why we need to hear this. Hey, do right by one another. Love your other fellow Christians. But this isn't to the exclusion of loving everyone else as well, because the next one is compassionate. And this is really a care for others, a concern for the well-being of others, to the level that a family would have cared for one another. So it's, even if they're not in your biological family, even if they're not a fellow Christian, to have compassion for people, to truly be interested in their well-being. And then we see the idea of being humble, which, you know, it's not really being self-deprecating all the time or having a dangerously low self-esteem. Really what this is the idea of self-forgetfulness, of really thinking of the interests of others, thinking of others more than you think about yourself. And I think C.S. Lewis said it best. He said, humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. So again, all these commands, very selfless, very other-focused, but the result is that you receive a blessing. It's that you end up happy. It's pretty counterintuitive, but it's the truth. And so a pretty nerdy thing about me, which is always a fun way to start a sentence, is that I really enjoy reading studies or articles, you know, research that's been done by, you know, scientists or different universities or experts around the idea of who we are as humans. So, you know, ideas like why we do what we do or the benefits of being in a community over a long period of time, those kinds of things, they interest me. And I always think it's cool whenever, you know, something I've read in the Bible is just reinforced by one of these studies. I always think that's neat. And I came across a study recently that was done by the University of Zurich, and it was on the idea of happiness. And what they did was they just took a group of people, and they gave them money. So I'm not sure how you get one of these groups of people to do these studies, but it sounds like a good place to be. But they just gave them money, and they told half the group, they said, you have to spend the money on yourself. And the other half of the group, they said, you have to spend the money on other people. And what they did, they just monitored brain activity when they made their decisions as far as the purchases, and they also surveyed the groups before and after the study. And I'm just going to read a real brief synopsis, kind of their finding. This is a direct quote. It said, what some have been aware of for a long time, others find hard to believe. Those who are concerned about the well-being of their fellow human beings are happier than those who focus only on their own advancement. And what's crazy about that study is it's really not even close to being the only one of its kind. There's a whole lot of research around this idea of selflessness leading to happiness, or they even have like studies about volunteering leading to mental health and physical health, where it just improves it drastically. But the whole idea behind these studies, it's not that God needed these studies to prove what he said. Really what it boils down to is this is us discovering how God has designed us from the beginning. Because you and I are not designed to thrive by focusing solely on ourselves. And when God gives us these commands, like in this passage here, these selfless commands that are focused on other people, and whenever he tells us things like, hey, it's better to give than to receive, he's not doing those things to prevent us from being happy. He's not out to get us or make us miserable. He's not anti-joy. God is just telling us that, hey, true happiness is found in a selfless life. And I think what's interesting is I think our society gets this to a degree. I think we understand this. You see these studies that are being done. You see these, the rise in volunteering and in charities and nonprofits, that sort of thing. But there's an issue for us. Because as we look at a list like this, our natural tendency, it's so easy for us to be like, oh, okay, I'll just do some nice things every day, just a few nice things, and then I'll be happy. But the issue is we can't just decide to be this selfless. You know, you might be someone who's pretty good at being like-minded. You know, you like giving up your needs, your goals for that of the larger community. Maybe you're someone who's naturally pretty compassionate towards people. Maybe you're really humble, which, of course, you can't tell anyone because then it wouldn't be true anymore. But as we all go down the list, we'll find one that every single one of us fails on, which is the last one that's given. It says, not repaying evil for evil or insult for insult, but on the contrary, giving a blessing. And I don't know if you notice or if you're paying attention, that doesn't say when someone treats you poorly, just, you know, turn away, walk away. Or when someone, you know, accidentally offends you, just let it slide. That's not what that says. That says to return a blessing when someone treats you in a way that could be defined as evil. So what that means, that would mean genuinely hoping for the best, praying for the best, and working and striving for the best of those who treat you the worst. How do we do that? Because I know that, I mean, maybe you're not like this, but I have a hard enough time giving someone, like just giving them a break when they accidentally cut me off on the highway. So this is a whole nother level of selflessness. It's not something we can just do or just will into our lives. And really, in my opinion, this is really where the rubber meets the road in this list, because we can try to do all those other things just for our own happiness. So at the end of the day, we're still being selfish. You know, we're doing these selfless ideas, these selfless things, really for our own happiness, then we're just being selfish. And this last one is really whenever we're going to find out what our motives are. Because once someone treats us poorly, our true motives are going to come out. And if we're doing things just to make ourselves happy and someone treats us poorly, we're not going to respond with blessing. So there comes a point where we have to realize that we can't just learn a few new tricks in order to be happy. We have to be completely transformed. And that actually takes us to our third and our last main idea today, which is that selflessness comes from knowing Jesus. So in order to be truly selfless, and as a result, be able to have a happiness that goes beyond our circumstances, we have to know Jesus. We have to know the one who was beaten, who was insulted, and who was killed for the sake of those who were killing him. Because Jesus laid down his life for you and for me, and when he was on the cross, this is what he prayed for the people who were killing him. He said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Jesus' entire purpose was to obtain the forgiveness of those who were responsible for his death. He's the picture, the perfect picture of returning blessing for evil. But Jesus isn't just That wasn't just his prayer. It wasn't just where he's an example. He just shows us the way. Jesus actually is the way, because unless we're changed by Jesus, we cannot begin to live like this. Until we're changed by Jesus, we can't begin to actually follow his example. We can't truly be concerned for the well-being of all other people, even those who treat us the worst. So in other words, unless we know Jesus, we're not truly going to be selfless. So unless we know Jesus, we're not truly going to be happy. I'm going to go ahead and call up the worship team and the response team. We're going to wind down here. But I think it's really important. One thing I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, when talking about happiness, to just be very clear that this is not a promise that our circumstances will always be great, or if you follow Jesus, your life will be easy. Because Jesus himself, he said, in this world, you will have trouble. You know, we don't need a PhD to understand that. That means in this world, we're going to have trouble. And the original audience of 1 Peter, they were followers of Jesus who were facing persecution, difficulty, and suffering because they were following Jesus. So if you tried to tell them, hey, following Jesus is going to make your life easy, that would have been ridiculous to them. But what this is a promise of, it's a promise of a happiness that goes beyond those circumstances. And it's not that you have to pretend that, you know, that bad things are good or that you have to smile whenever you're really hurting inside. This is just a happiness that really frees you from the way that people treat you. It frees you from being controlled by those who would treat you poorly. And it frees you from being at the mercy of your unpredictable circumstances that you face in life. It's so much deeper and so much real than any happiness that we typically try to chase after in this life. So as we close down today, I just want to leave you with two things, two questions to think about as you go home today and as you go throughout your week. First, how do you view God? Do you see him as someone who's just set up these boundaries and set up these rules to prevent you from being happy? Or do you see him as a good father who truly knows what's best for you and actually does care about your happiness? And secondly, I would just ask you to consider as you go throughout your week, what are the ways right now that you're trying to find happiness? What are the avenues that you're going down? What are the things that you've told yourself, if I just got that, I'd be happy? What are those things? And are you focusing solely just on yourself? And is it working? Because maybe it's time that we look to Jesus. Maybe it's time that you look to Jesus, the one who was willing to lay down his life for you so that you could have life. He loves you enough to lay down his life for you. Because that truth right there, the truth of the gospel, can transform you whether you've been a Christian for 20 years or whether you've yet to decide to follow him yet, because the truth of the gospel should never stop transforming us. And maybe it's in trusting in Jesus and actually realizing what he's done for you that you then begin to live like Jesus and begin to do that for others and begin to actually live a selfless life. You might be surprised by the joy and the happiness that is found in that kind of life. Thanks.